Hello, everybody. Aloy here. Welcome to tonight's program. Glad you can make it. Stick around. You'll either have a good time or exit the theater weeping uncontrollably. We're going to start this evening with... Hello. We're going to start this... We have to get this microphone fixed, Kathy. Do we have any money in the account? No? Not even to fix the microphone? How many podcast subscribers would it take to fix the microphone? These are Sennheiser microphones. Really? About 10? Okay. If we get 10 podcast subscribers tonight, we can get a new microphone. We're going to start tonight with our economic affairs correspondent, Prairie 2, whose missives we have either lost in the mail here recently or were otherwise preoccupied. And I really apologize for that because Prairie 2's points of view are very, are certainly worth sharing. And if you want to respond to what he writes, he has his very own website you can go to and respond. It's prairie2.com, and the two is numeral two, prairie2.com. This is what Bruce says tonight. Did the Republicans all leave and not tell us? What's good for Sichuan Tenzong Heavy Industrial Machinery Company is good for America. Or at least that's what the masters of the universe at General Motors would have you believe. GM is patting itself on the back for keeping 3,000 Hummer jobs in the U.S., but that deal is only for a year and a half. Then Sichuan Tenzong Heavy Industrial Machinery Company can do as it would like. The only good news is that the Humvee military truck isn't made by GM, and those jobs will stay in Indiana. Gasoline prices are increasing, despite the fact that demand for gas is continuing to decline. Inventories have not declined, even though the oil companies have slashed refinery production as the economy continues its slow motion collapse. The economic numbers for May are just starting to emerge, and they aren't expected to be good. Retail sales are expected to decline about 4%, and that could be a rosy forecast. Walmart, that had been benefiting from the shift to low-end retailers by the formerly middle-class shopper, has stopped reporting monthly sales figures altogether. The jobless rate continues to go up. State and local governments are cutting pay for workers as well as eliminating jobs and programs that serve the public. California is going to force 2 million people off state-run health insurance, putting an even bigger strain on emergency rooms that are also losing funding. Even the state's poison control center will be killed off, and the 800 callers a day will have to rely on the overworked emergency rooms. And who does the emergency room doc call when an unusual poisoning case comes in? You guessed it. States are finding that tax revenue is down more than expected, and as they cut back more on spending and services, tax revenues go down still more. The Republican diversion of the stimulus package into tax cuts is already coming home to roost. When the kids of Republicans drink something that they found in the maid's closet, do Republicans call poison control? Do they drive their Hummer to the same emergency room we do? Do they still live in this country, or did they leave us all behind? Prairie2.com. Speaking of cuts in California, oh my effing God, huh? Have you been following this story? I watched Schwarzenegger a little bit today. Boy, I bet he's sorry he ever participated in removing Gray Davis from office. You think? John Amato, writing at Crooks and Liars, has finally come out and said it. Schwarzenegger's budget cuts will finally finish off the state of California. Boom. He quotes this: the cuts Mr. Schwarzenegger has proposed to make up the difference of their budget shortfall, if enacted by the legislature, would turn California into a place that in some ways would be unrecognizable in modern America. Poor children would have no health insurance. Prisoners would be released by the thousands. State parks will be closed. Nearly all of the billions of dollars in cuts the Schwarzenegger administration has proposed would affect programs for poor Californians, although prisons and schools would take enormous hits as well. Mike Genest, the state's finance director, said on a conference call with reporters last Friday, quote, government doesn't provide services to rich people. It doesn't even really provide services to the middle class. End quote. And then he added, quote, you have to cut where the money is. End quote. In less than 2 weeks, the Schwarzenegger administration has gone from warning residents that a vote against the budget measures could send the state, some $24 billion in the red, into utter turmoil, to sanguine acceptance that, quote, the people have spoken, end quote, and that the state government must move on. But it gets worse. These proposals, as well as those that would make cuts to state parks, the prison system, and other state agencies, are winding their way through Sacramento now, where they will be voted on by committees and eventually the full legislature. If lawmakers sign off on closing the health insurance program for children whose families make too much to qualify for Medicaid, California will be the first state in the nation to close the SCHIP program. Begun in 1997, the program reimburses states at a higher rate than for Medicaid to deliver health insurance to children and teenagers. With the cuts to Medicaid, the state would probably increase its number of uninsured people by nearly 2 million, according to the California Budget Project. But Gray Davis just had to be recalled. John Amato writing at Crooks and Liars. It's really shocking. I usually go for the larger, more devastating word than to call something shocking. I usually call it unconscionable or breathtaking or unbelievable. But all of a sudden, the word shocking seems to fit. It's shocking that the state of California is prepared to cut services to everyone there who is not wealthy. The wealthy don't need state parks. If they want to go to a state park and they're all closed in California, hop on the private jet and go to one in Oahu or somewhere else. The middle class in California has been ripped to pieces. And I think the middle class people, I know it's happening here in Georgia, are discovering something that they never wanted to discover, and that is the paucity of services provided for poor people. Because all of a sudden, middle-class folks are making that first trip to a food bank, making that first trip to the county health department instead of their family physician. Because the family physician wants $165 an office visit, and prior to our middle-class person losing their health insurance, that office visit copay was $10. Now it's $165. That's to walk in the door and sit there for an hour after your appointment time waiting to see the doc, who himself is way overworked. So now it's trips to the county health department or the emergency room of your local trauma center, publicly financed hospital. But there's a problem with that, too. The publicly financed hospitals are all of a sudden finding that the public financing isn't there. So what's the next step?
Don't sell that old cow for a car. You might want to stay right where you are. Take a little advice from me. 'Cause I read the want ads every day. The voices in the paper always say, if you ain't got the do-re-mi, boy, if you ain't got the do-re-mi, you better go back to your beautiful Texas.
21 past the hour. I was talking the other night about the about the horrible application of religion and all of its madness to a small child's mind, and how unfair that is, how desperately unfair it is. If a parent subscribes to a certain religious belief, doesn't it make sense to, out of respect for that parent's child, wouldn't it make sense for the parent to not dump those kinds of issues onto a child at 2, 3, 4, 5, 8, 9, 10, and instead let the child grow up free of the horror of organized religion? And at some point then, as the child becomes a young adult and then an adult, if the child feels a need, a child no longer, feels a need to subscribe to the same kind of belief system that the parent did, the child can freely choose it. Wouldn't that be respect for the sovereignty of the child as the child grows into an adult? Wouldn't it? Huh? That's a little too maddening, though, for religious people, because I think a part of them understands that given a choice, a clear choice, the child will say, "Are you out of your goddamn mind, Mommy? Are you crazy, Daddy? You want me to believe this? Please." But you see, the parents can't offer that choice to their children because that choice was not given to them. An example, and this is grim. You see this frequently, or I should say not infrequently. This is about a week ago in Wisconsin. A mother in Wisconsin was convicted of reckless homicide for praying over her child instead of getting medical treatment. The child was 11 years old and suffered from childhood diabetes. The mother, who's 41, was found guilty after 4 hours of deliberation by a jury in Wausau. Her lawyer said she would appeal. The mother told police that she and her husband prayed for their daughter's recovery before she died from complications of diabetes on Easter last year. Doctors testified that the 11-year-old would have shown symptoms for days, if not weeks, that her death was imminent. Mom told the investigators that for nearly 2 weeks before she died, the daughter had been drinking and urinating frequently and been fatigued, desperately fatigued. Classic warning signs for diabetics. Mom faces up to 25 years in prison, and Dad is expected to go on trial on the same charge in July. Now, here's an 11-year-old child whose life was snatched. Where are the ones who scream child murder because someone in the privacy of her own body decides to get an abortion that involves a clump of cells, and that woman is shouted at that she's a baby killer? What about this? The hypocrisy of Christian right-wingers in this country is, it's gagging. It's deadly. Here's a child that didn't have a chance. This child didn't know anything about what, an insulin shot? Is that all it would have taken? But the parents sit there and mumble garbage to some sky spook. How can that be? While their daughter lays there and dies. And the means of keeping the child alive for, maybe 40, 50 years is a car ride away at hospital emergency room. This is especially attention-grabbing to me because I had a friend, 52 years old, who died about 2 weeks ago from the effects of diabetes that she's had since she was a child. And I wasn't with her when she died. She died up in New York, but some of our mutual friends were. And the death was not pleasant. She died in hospice. The death was not going to be pleasant, but she died in hospice. So every effort was made to ease her out of this life. And it finally happened. So, but my friend, who was in her early 50s, had been given 50 years of life by her parents. When my friend was 2 or 3 or 4 or 5 and this was diagnosed, her parents didn't start mumbling some kind of rat garbage to a sky spook. Her parents took her to a doctor. So here we go again. The mother is 41 and facing 25 years in prison. The daughter was 11 and is dead.
Life's too short to listen to right-wing radio. Here's Mike Malloy.
A child lay in the starlit night, safe in the glow of his dark light. How strange to choose to end a life. How strange to choose to kill a child.
Hoover, it's about 25 before the hour. Peter in Vermont is asking here to hype the chat room so he can get his chat on. All right. What? Nobody's there, Peter? Nobody's in the chat room? Is that going to wind up being a busted idea, Kathy? I hope not, too. Go to MikeMalloy.com and must one be a subscriber? I don't know either. Oh, I think you have to register, but you don't have to be a subscriber. That's right. So, you know, if you want that feature as part of this program, use it, okay? You know, use it or lose it. So go to MikeMalloy.com, register, and go to the chat room. Say hi to Peter. He's in there waiting so that he can chat. if you feel like it, I guess.
Yeah, it's our social network. But again, every time you say that, I'm just reminded of that hilarious Saturday Night Live skit with Christopher Walken. Christopher Walken's psychic friends, you know, call me up. I'll come over to your house. We'll talk. You know, whatever. Hang out. It was so funny. And then they brought in Crispin Glover and two or three other creepy Hollywood actors. It was really, well, you had to see it, but
we're not
Google
doing,
it.
We're not doing that, though, right?
No, but it's really funny.
All right. Participate. All right. Kay writes, Mike, I really appreciated your rant last night on the subject of religion, in particular on the fundamentalist brand of Christianity. You talked about the impact of that fear-based indoctrination on children who are exposed to these ideas before they can even form words that might challenge the messages. That's exactly what happened to my brother and me. Growing up in a fundamentalist sect of Christianity called the New Apostolic Church. As you said, the damage is incalculable, except when I look at my therapy bills. Those can be calculated. But seriously, it took me until my early 30s to break free. My brother eventually did so as well, about 6 years ago. Our mother left the church years ago, but our dad was a faithful member until the day he died. For me, the tragedy of that upbringing ends here, but not for my brother. 12 years ago, he married a woman in that church, and they had a son. 8 years ago, they divorced. I think you can see where this is going. My brother is now fighting to save his son from the kind of effed-up indoctrination he experienced in this church, and it has become a constant battle. Thankfully, there was a provision in his divorce settlement that mandated going to mediation on issues like education and religion. My brother is now on the verge of taking legal action to protect his child from a dangerous sect that has done incalculable harm to so many so-called true believers. My brother is fighting to shield his son from a supposedly Christian church, which just about says it all on the subject of religion, don't you think? He's desperately trying to save his son from living through the turmoil that he himself experienced before finally being able to break free of the sick indoctrination. I hope he is successful, or we will have yet another generation of our family spiritually and emotionally damaged at the hands of so-called Christians. Thank goodness I saw at a young age that there was another way. This is why going to a liberal, social justice-oriented Catholic high school was actually good for me. It showed me that not all Christians were like the ones I spent my Sundays with, and it gave me the freedom to question what I had been taught in a safe environment. Today, I would consider myself an agnostic truth seeker, something I don't think would ever have happened had my only frame of reference been the fundamentalism of my childhood. Tragically, for so many children, that's all they will ever know. Okay. Yeah, that and, you know, an early death. I guess there's no point in continuing to beat this topic anymore for this evening. It's just vile to me. It really is. I've had a chance, a rare opportunity. There's a downside to this, but I've had a rare opportunity at a fairly late stage in my life to experience the joy of being a brand new father all over again with Molly. My next up oldest is 30. Molly is soon to be 5. And the downside is that she may have to deal at a time when it would be difficult for her to deal with my death. I've determined that I will stay alive until she's 21. We'll see. But I will do everything that I can, you know, to do that. And this was part of the conversation that Kathy and I had before we got involved in the pregnancy. And actually, now Kathy's much younger, so she'll have one surviving parent. But that's the downside. That's the oh no side of this. The positive upside, oh yes side, is to experience, and I would assume this would be true for most of us, to experience at a late stage in your life, once again, the innocence that a child operates with, the innocence and the trust and the curiosity and the fearlessness. You know, I've watched Molly develop a strange fear of bugs all of a sudden. Maybe that's because she saw me get spider bit so many times. But, and a huge standard poodle that belongs to a friend of ours leaped at her and to lick her all over her about a year ago and scared the bejesus out of Molly. And she's now just about overcome a fear of dogs. But, you know, most kids, they're fearless. They don't have any fears. And they bring to you, if you want to see it, their innocence and their curiosity and their love. I mean, it's unbelievable to once again come into direct contact with love that has no restraints, ask nothing in return, and is just there. It's astonishing. This kid moves me to tears more than any other experience I've ever had. Now, they're tears of joy and happiness to be able to be this close to a little kid again. Man. And, you know, another part of the not so good part of it is it makes me wonder why I didn't focus to a much greater degree on all this when I was in my 20s and 30s and 40s and had children. It's something that, that causes regret. I think to myself, yeah, it's like that old saying, when somebody's on their deathbed, they're never going to say, I wish I would have spent more time at the office. No. You know, they'll say, I wish I would have spent more time with my children or my spouse or my friends or whatever. But unqualified love is something that is rare. And usually, it's been my experience about the only creature that can deliver that, a human creature, is a child. Unqualified. There are no restrictions, especially where it concerns the kid's parents. Unqualified love. And to me, that also is why it is so horrific when a parent betrays that, whether it is through beating the child, physical abuse, or in so many weird instances, childhood sexual abuse, violence, denying the child proper medical care because the parents are convinced there's some spook up in the sky that's going to say, yeah, talk to me. Instead of getting the, I mean, it's just refocused me in a way that I, frankly, didn't want to be refocused. I think most of us will reach a certain age where, you know, whatever we were going to experience, we've experienced. There's not a whole lot left. You know, you get to that point, you really do. There's not a whole lot left that one could consider brand spanking new. Okay, jumping out of an airplane. That might be something that 99.9% of us never did. That would be a new experience, wouldn't it? But I'm talking about human relationships, interpersonal relationships, how we define or become immersed in or run from love, what caring really is, what really being focused on another human being really, really is. You know, we've done all that, right? We've done all that. You reach a certain age where you say, well, whew, thank God the grandkids will be gone now. Sunday night, they're going back home with their parents. Ooh, man, nice to see them, but glad they're gone. And all of a sudden, I have a 4.5-year-old that is younger than my grandchildren. And it's astonishing, just astonishing what you rediscover. All those things that perhaps one wasn't paying attention to the first time, or the second, or the third, or the fifth. And, you know, again, you reach that age, and I realize there's a huge gender bias in all this. I understand. No need to write me an email and say, well, you know, you men... Come on, I understand that. You know, you all know, if you're a regular listener to this program, you know I fled from Kathy's wanting to get together and get married. I said, you know, Jesus, Kathy, I have food in my refrigerator older than you. But all of a sudden, Kathy is safely ensconced in that age bracket where it's no longer cradle robbing. But... So yeah, it is a male thing, I guess. If a man is lucky enough in his last quarter of his life to experience a child again, the innocence of a child. Now I don't know what the hell I'm talking about.
It's a hard life. It's a hard life. It's a very hard life. It's a hard life wherever you go. And if we poison our children with hate. In the hard life, it's all that we'll know. And there ain't no place in this world.
You, who are on the road, must have a code that you can live by.
Hey, Truth Seekers, it's time for your humble and obedient servant, Mike Malloy.
Because the past is just a goodbye. Teach
10 before the hour. From MAL in Saskatoon. Regarding healing of sick children. Didn't it ever occur to these religious nuts that if their God wanted to heal people through prayer instead of medicine, then it wouldn't have allowed the development of modern medicine? Yeah, I don't understand that. I completely have missed that one. How this belief that prayer... there's an experiment done. I'm sure most of you are familiar with it. There were three control groups... people who were sick. The first group knew that he would be prayed about. The first sick person knew that there would be prayers offered up for his healing. The second sick person did not know that prayers would be offered up for his healing. The third person knew that prayers would be offered up for his healing, but there was a third condition. I forget what it was. Well, the result was that the people who knew that they were being prayed for died or got sicker at a higher rate than the people who didn't know. I don't know. What is it? Does that prove these people's God has a sense of humor? Dark, but a sense of humor nonetheless. Oh, you're praying? Here, let me kill that person. You know, I mean, it's craziness, isn't it? Well, yes, it is. What else we got here? Regarding Dr. Tiller's murder Sunday. Mike, listen to your pro. This is from Steve in Longmont. Is that California? Mike, listen to your program last night, and it just reinforced my disdain for all Republicans slash conservatives slash religious zealots, these cretins who have nothing, quote, but concern and love, end quote, for the unborn fetuses, care nothing about them after they're born. Where were these creeps when we were butchering millions of Vietnamese peasants? Where were they when the U.S.-backed economic sanctions against Iraq caused the deaths of 500,000 Iraqi children after the first Gulf War? They did not complain about U.S. warplanes pulverizing Iraqi cities with shock and awe. War is good, but abortion is bad? I don't understand the thinking process. Of course, no one on the pro-choice side wants abortions to happen. Ultimately, an abortion is a decision that the woman, not the doctor, has to make. As Obama has suggested, we as a society should strive to reduce the number of abortions, but the debate is never framed in those terms. It's framed as doctors who kill babies for money. And then the debate ends with some religious freak bombing a clinic or shooting innocent people in the name of their God. Steve in Longmont. Yeah, I have close friends who are very active in the Georgia Abortion Rights Action League, GARL, and some friends who are involved in abortion rights on a national level. These are women who have spent a good part of their activist life in this particular activity, making sure that women have the right to privacy and if and when that decision ever has to be made. And to the last one of these women, they are completely and totally not in favor of abortion. Who is? This is why I wish that the, and I hate the term pro-choice, because that's not what Roe v. Wade was about. I wish that the people who support a cone of privacy around a woman's reproductive organs would take this argument and the framing of this argument away from these right-wing asses. I'm so sick of this baby killer stuff and let me live and all the melodramatics that these psychopaths go through. And then to accuse people, women who because of whatever the circumstances, and the circumstances are not anyone's business except the woman, the doctor, hopefully the man, involved. None of these anti-abortion people have a clue as to why a woman is approaching a clinic on a certain day to sweep from her body a cluster of cells that, if left alone, might become a human being. I have yet to meet a pro-choice person who is pro-abortion. There are no pro-abortion people. They don't exist except in the fevered brains of these crazed right-wing religious freaks who understand that if a woman has a right to that kind of privacy, she has rights that her religion or their religion otherwise denies her. She has sovereignty. She has independence. She has the right to make her own decisions, and we'll have none of that because, after all, woman brought evil onto this earth. Woman! Because woman listen to the talking snake and woman ate of the tree of life and woman brought all this evil onto the earth. So woman is not going to have the right to make that kind of decision. You see, of course you do. There's no such thing as a pro-abortion person. But there damn sure are people who believe in the sovereignty and privacy of women. It just so happens that most of them are not members of a church. We'll be back after the break. Welcome back. 7 past the hour on the Malloy program. And probably wherever you are, too. Hey, how's the National Council for a New America coming? Anyone heard anything about those folks? You have to keep an eye on these right-wing neo-Nazi organizations. Nobody paid too much attention to PNAC, Project for New American Century. And look where that got us. Also, there was Newt Gingrich's, the serial adulterer's contract for America? Was it Contract for America? Of course, it was Contract on America. Whatever happened to that? I guess that has been long ago deep sixed. But I don't think that one was particularly dangerous, except it got the rubes to vote Republican once again. But the National Council for a New America, remember that one? That's this new organization that has started up by some Republicans who want to, I don't know, have a council where they can come up with a new America. I have no idea. But anyway, keep your eye out for the activities of the National Council for a New America, okay? New York Times is reporting this online. I think it's going to be in their edition tomorrow. There was another boo-boo, an accident, one of those internet accidents. The feds mistakenly made public a 266-page report that gives detailed information about hundreds of this country's civilian nuclear sites and programs, including maps showing the precise locations of stockpiles of fuel for nuclear weapons. Yeah, that's right. This is probably another Cheney black ops. You know, this is probably done by the former Blackwater people. What's their company now? But there it is. The publication of the document was revealed yesterday in an online newsletter devoted to issues of federal secrecy. And that publicity has set off a debate among this country's nuclear experts about what dangers, if any, this disclosure poses. It also prompted a flurry of investigations in Washington into why the document was made public to begin with. Yeah, well, that, you know. Tonight, after inquiries from the New York Times, the document was withdrawn from a government printing office website. Yeah, it's been up there, see, until a reporter, I guess William Broad, the reporter from the New York Times, called him up or something, said, are you aware of what you have on your website? Ah? Several nuclear experts argued that any dangers from this disclosure were minimal, given that the general outlines of the most sensitive information were already known publicly. Really? Well, then no problem, right? Aren't we always concerned about those nasty, horrible jihadists finding out where our nuclear material that we make bombs with, but they can't, where it's stashed over here? I mean, haven't we been told by the right-wingers? I'm sure this is going to be a great topic tomorrow on right-wing, foaming, frothing, stinking talk radio, right? Oh, the Obama administration! Now they know where all our nuclear stockpiles are! Yeah, well. John Deutsch, a former director of the CIA, under an unmentionable president, and also deputy secretary of defense under the same unmentionable president. He's now at MIT. He said, quote, these screw-ups happen. End quote. Oh, really? Oh, okay. Well, then, you know. However, a differing opinion, the president of the Institute for Science and International Security, a private group in Washington that tracks nuclear proliferation, said that information that shows where nuclear fuels are stored, quote, can provide thieves or terrorists inside information that can help them seize the material. Duh! Which is why that kind of data is not given out. Duh! It can become a physical security threat. End quote. Really? No kidding! Is that right? Huh? President Obama sent the document to Congress on May 5th for congressional review and possible revision, and the government printing office subsequently posted the draft declaration on its website. So remember, before the Bush crime family packed up their poisons and their lies and their deceit and left Washington, they embedded in just about every agency extant in Washington, D.C., Bush crime family, well, not really. He was the figurehead. Cheney crime family, corporatist activists, right-wing trolls who are to not only report to Cheney everything that needs to be reported to Cheney, but also to disrupt government to the best of their ability. They were given civil service jobs rather than the political appointee jobs they had, because civil service jobs are almost as difficult to remove as wisdom teeth. So what do you want to bet that the person, the general account, was it the general printing office, general accounting office? What did I just say? Government printing office. What do you want to bet that it was a Cheney plant who got his or her grubby little fingers on this and decided to put it up on the web so that the right-wingers now tomorrow morning can start their cacophonous screaming across the fruited plain, border to border and coast to coast, about the lack of security in the Obama administration, the fact that Barack Obama is going to be the death of us all. What do you want to bet? Huh? As of tonight, though, the reasons for the posting on the government printing office's website remains a mystery. Well, duh. I just told you what it is, New York Times writer. That's all it is. It's a Cheney plant who is deliberately has deliberately taken this kind of subversive action. This, expect this to go on during the 8 years of the Obama administration. It's not going to stop. The document presents what appears to be an exhaustive listing of the sites that comprise this nation's civilian nuclear complex, which stretches coast to coast and includes everything from nuclear reactors to highly sensitive sites at weapons laboratories. A security expert at a Federation of American Scientists in Washington revealed the existence of the document Monday in an electronic newsletter titled Secrecy News that he publishes on the web. and he expressed bafflement at its disclosure, calling it, quote, a one-stop shop for information on U.S. nuclear programs, end quote. Really? And it goes on and on. You can read it in tomorrow's New York Times, or go to newyorktimes.com, nytimes.com right now, and read it right now. And there was a court ruling by the California Supreme Court today that bears a bit of a mention. Who was it? Was it Dick Durbin, the senator from senior senator now from Illinois? The other senator's an absolute nutcase. But Dick Durbin, who said in an offhand throwaway comment that was just pregnant, you'll pardon the expression, with truth the other day, when he said the banking industry owns Congress. Or did he say the Senate? The banking industry pretty much owns everything. If you listen to this program on a regular basis, you hear Prairie 2 offering up gems of wisdom about how the banking industry, or if you read Paul Krugman's column, pretty much the same, gems of wisdom about how the banking industry is destroying everything and how Barack Obama and Timothy Geithner are accelerating, if not accelerating the destruction, certainly keeping it going. And if you did your homework assignment last week and read, or not read, but watched the Zeitgeist movie on your computer, you'll understand what an enormous scam it really is. You know, over the years of doing talk radio, I used to have people try to call me. I think I mentioned this. Call me and try to educate me about the Federal Reserve. And I used to just, you know, blow them off. You know, okay, tinfoil hat. Okay, yeah, goodbye. You know, coming across like a real smart-ass radio talk show host, know-it-all. Which I deeply, deeply regret. And now that I've seen the Zeitgeist movie and Zeitgeist Addendum, all of a sudden, you know, light bulbs are going off over my head. And I'm thinking, Jesus, why did I pay attention to this stuff 20 years ago? Not that it would have made any difference, but I wouldn't have walked around in 20 extra years of ignorance about our financial system. We'll be right back.
Stand too close. You might catch it. Oh. Stand too close.
Past the hour, the court case in California, the California Supreme Court unanimously today overturned a billion-dollar class action award against Bank of America. I remember what Dick Durbin said. You know this anyway. The banks own this country. They did it today, and they ruled that banks can collect overdraft fees from accounts in which government benefits intended for subsistence are directly deposited. These predatory goddamn institutions, I can't think of a non-living entity that drives me to distraction more than banks. My long ago, dead grandfather, the Italian immigrant, used to rant and rave about banks, and I could never figure out what the hell he was talking about. Well, that's old people stuff. What are they talking about? Hoo-ha! The ruling today threw out a verdict from 5 years ago by a San Francisco jury that found that the Bank of America Corporation, Bank America, violated state law by taking fees for insufficient funds from accounts that were set up to receive Social Security benefits. Do you understand that? Social Security benefits like disability payments and money to children and widows and orphans, that sort of thing. The bank customers who had stood to benefit from the award included over 1 million California residents who are receiving government assistance. – And a representative of the Social Security recipients said the award with interest would have cost Bank of America more than $2 billion that would have gone in various amounts to these 1.1 million California residents. Keep in mind that banks earn about $40 million a year in just in California in overdraft charges. That's thievery, isn't it? Oh, right. Okay. Somebody writes a bad check. Well, I'm not finished with the story yet. Okay. And some of the Social Security recipients in this lawsuit lost 20% of their monthly income in a single day because of bank fees. Now, how could that have happened, huh? The court noted that an overdraft could stem from a bank's honoring a rent or utility payment before the government benefits have been deposited. Do you understand that? The bank would be fully aware where the checks were coming from and to whom they were going. These are essentially some form of a welfare check. I'm using it in the term social welfare, whether it is an SSI payment, a Medicaid payment, a Social Security payment, whatever it was. So the bank knew, because these are automatic drafts, automatic deposits, the bank knew where the money was coming from and how desperately the people needed the money. The accounts are in Bank America, and if one of the recipients, and apparently a lot of recipients of these checks did this for whatever reason, they would write a check to pay their rent on, say, the 1st, and the government check would not arrive till the 2nd. So what would this goddamn filthy Bank of America do? Huh? The check would be written on the 1st. It would be instantly cleared because that's how the bank, you don't have float anymore. And the bank, knowing full well that a check was on the way from the government, would reach into the recipient's account and take, what is it now, 35 bucks? You sons of bitches. See, this is the only time where I really wished that the religious superstitious mythology bat crap really existed, because I would like to know that there was a place of unmitigated pain where executives like from Bank America would spend eternity because of this kind of stuff. You know? One of the justices in this unanimous decision of overturning this award to poor people, one of the justices, Carlos Moreno, wrote for the court, quote, requiring banks to dishonor checks can harm the customer's credit rating, resulting in the customer incurring fees and affecting the customer's relationship with merchants. Huh? What? But a spokesman for the people, the Social Security recipient, said the court's ruling would punish the poor. He said they don't have a credit rating. These are the poorest of the poor. They live on $800 a month. But the justice, Carlos Moreno, you see what he's saying? Requiring banks to dishonor checks, to return them marked insufficient funds, could harm the customer's credit rating, resulting in the customer incurring fees. But, Mr. Justice Carlos Moreno, that's exactly what the bank did. The bank took the fee. The bank reached into the recipient's account and took the money. Walter Dellinger, who represented Bank of America, said he was pleased that the court concluded today that the bank's practices were, quote, entirely lawful, end quote.
I saw the boss come walking down along the factory line, saying, boys, we have to tighten up our belts. But he didn't look any thinner than he did a year ago, and I wonder just how hungry that man felt. He knows it ain't hard to get along with somebody else's troubles. They don't make him lose any sleep at night. Just as long as fate is out there busting somebody else's bubbles, everything.
Walk to my
the truth speaker, Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour, regarding that Bank of America story, D writes in, why didn't these poor folks simply change banks? I can't understand why poor people bank with these damn banks anyway. I've told all my friends and family to stay away from them. Bank with a credit union or a smaller bank where the local manager knows who you are. Tell people to leave these goddamn big banks alone. As the old folks say, that'll learn them. D, yeah, I've said it many times, D, on this program. I have not dealt with a bank in, 35 years, 40 years. I've been with a credit union ever since the, I decided it was time to become an adult and, get a checking account, get a savings account, get some IRAs, get a credit card. Ah! The only bank we deal with now is a local Georgia bank that we have to because of a business account, since our credit union doesn't carry business accounts, yada, yada, yada. But, yeah, credit unions are, they don't get involved in all this craziness. That's why, have you noticed you haven't heard of one credit union association applying for federal funds or whining or appearing in the pages of the business section of the New York Times or the Wall Street Journal with chaos raining down on its head, right? Have you noticed? This was at Crooks and Liars, and I want to get this in very quickly. A lot of talk about this filthy pig, Bill O'Reilly, and how he is one of the people responsible for the murder of the physician on Sunday who was in church, Dr. Tiller, handing out bulletins while his wife was singing in the choir. Bill O'Reilly is really just about the lowest of the low. I mean, O'Reilly's the type of person that if he were that stuff on the bottom of your shoe, he would be who you would scrape your foot against the curb just to get it off your shoe. He really is disgusting. Limbaugh is a sick son of a bitch, but O'Reilly is just flat out evil. I mean, he really is. And so many of the people in that Fox News stable, General Beck and PFC Hannity and the rest of these thugs, there really is no way you can get them off the air. So don't even think about it. Don't even think about it, because there are millions of Americans who want to hear that drivel. They do. They want to hear it. I don't know why, but I don't know why water's wet either, or why you can't push a string. These are some of the mysteries of life, right? Why would people? I think the people who watch Fox News Channel or listen to right wingers are filled with self-loathing. I'm really convinced of that. They hate themselves and they project it out onto everything. But I digress. What to do? This has happened to me, and I'm sure it's happened to you. You go someplace where you have to wait, whether it's an optometrist's office or a car repair shop or, what else? You go to a plumbing company and sit there and waiting for someone to come out and talk to you about a plumbing. You know, whatever it is, all these public places you go, waiting rooms, restaurants, whatever, they all have, not all, but a lot of them have televisions, with a little sign underneath, don't change the channel or don't adjust the volume, If the TV, this is on Crooks and Liars, if the TV is turned to Fox, politely ask whoever is available who works there to turn it off or change the channel. If they ask why, just tell them Fox News Channel is un-American, and it promotes domestic terrorism. And if they won't turn it off, just tell them you'll leave. You take your business elsewhere. And the person who wrote this, I don't have his or her name. Oh, it was John Amato again. That's right. He says, I've been doing this for years. I told them I refused to pay for a service and be forced to listen to propaganda. And only one office manager got ticked off at me, but she still changed it. Imagine if millions of us did this. Absolutely. You don't have to make a big public scene. You don't have to stand up. A bunch of people sitting around in a bar or restaurant, Fox News is on, stand up and say, hey, they're goddamn propaganda terror. You don't have to do that. You just go to the manager quietly and say, would you please change the channel? Why? Because this channel promotes domestic terrorism. Well, you must be out of your mind. Well, if you don't change the channel, I'm going to take my business down the street. Hold on a minute. Let me go check with the owner. You know, that kind of thing. Our military affairs correspondent, Sharon, sent this to me. Apparently, the American people hate the troops. Every day, this abominable Gitmo remains open. It puts our military personnel overseas in greater danger. Why won't Americans listen to the so-called commanders on the ground, the ones they've been talking about for years, like David Petraeus, who tell us Gitmo must be closed? And then she sends me a poll taken by USA Today. And Sharon writes, if this poll is accurate, I'm ashamed to be an American. It's like you said, we are the dumbest, most cowardly sons of bitches on the planet. We have to find a way around the right-wing lie machine and get the truth out about Gitmo and torture. It might help if we get the retired military officers who endorsed Obama because he was going to close Gitmo in front of the TV cameras, if they're not too pissed at the president for reviving the military commissions. I'm afraid that our country has crossed a line that can't be walked back, from which we can't be walked back. And so here's the poll from USA Today. This is from yesterday. Americans are overwhelmingly opposed to closing the detention center for suspected terrorists at Guantanamo and moving some of the detainees to prisons on U.S. soil, a USA Today Gallup poll finds. By more than 2-1, those surveyed say Guantanamo shouldn't be closed, and by more than 3-1, they oppose moving some of the accused terrorists housed there to prisons in their own states. In many parts of the world, however, Gitmo has become a symbol of U.S. arrogance and abuse, and Obama has cited its closure as a way to lay the foundation for better relations. This is one of the few subjects on which most Americans side with the views of the Bush administration over its successor, the Obama administration. Political scientist Paul Friedman, the University of Virginia, who studies public opinion, says, quote, coming up on 8 years after September 11th, fear remains, and fear is politically potent. When it comes to the issues of terrorism, people are inclined to err on the side of their fear. It's unbelievable, isn't it? We have the first bomber of the World Trade Center in a supermax prison in, I think, Marion, Illinois. Is that where it is? We had a Christian former veteran or a veteran who murdered 168 people in Oklahoma City in a supermax prison until he was executed. We have all kinds of people who have actually been charged with, tried, convicted, and sentenced for crimes. Who are heinous crimes, horrible crimes, that are locked up inside supermax max prisons and will never, ever, 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 ever get out. Whether you agree with that or not is a different topic, but that's where they are and that's where they shall stay. The people in Guantanamo have been convicted of nothing. And the only person's word we have that they are involved in terrorism is Dick Cheney's. Oh, okay, George Bush, but Bush is a puppet. Dick Cheney is the one who has singled out, accused, ordered the torture and or murder of, and then the ones who have survived, it's been Dick Cheney who has labeled them the worst of the worst. Didn't he say that? Who in the hell said so? Dick Cheney. So the cowardice and fear that is just ripping this country to pieces and turning us into a bunch of whiny-ass cowards. You notice that? Where's my guns? I want my guns. I'm going to pray. My kid's dying, but maybe the sky spook will do something. Just a mass of cowards. I'm talking about moral cowardice. I'm talking about ethical cowardice. I'm talking about just pure, absolutely afraid of our own shadows. What the hell has happened? Who did this? You know who did this to us? Yeah, him again, Dick Cheney. And the rest of these people who for 8 years pounded it and pounded it and pounded it, just like Joseph Goebbels said to do it. Scare the sons of bitches. Once you have a scared population, terrified of its own shadow because of some booger bear that's going to come and get them, You can do anything you want to with that population. This is the Bush legacy. America, you ought to be so goddamn ashamed of yourself for being so cowardly and such chicken asses. I cannot believe this. You're afraid of bringing people to this country who have never been even charged with a crime, much less convicted. But because Dick Cheney said they're terrorists, you're going to wet your pants and stick your thumb in your mouth and whine and weep and wail and tell USA Today, oh, I don't want them here. Oh, they'll hurt me. They'll hurt me. I mean, how disgusting is that?
Hey, truth seekers, gather round the campfire. It's more Mike Malloy.
It's about 10 before the hour. A couple of emails, and we'll probably run up against a break then. When we come back, we'll take your phone calls. The number here is 800. I'm sorry. It's not 800. It's 877. 877-996-2556 or 877-99-MALLOY. Cat Mary in Memphis, regarding that internet leak of where all of our piles of destructive material are located. Cat Mary writes, the corporatist crime family has been lusting after control of the internet for a long time. This so-called leak gives them a reason for taking control. Incompetence only goes so far, and then it's revealed as nothing but pure nastiness. Yeah, I reckon that is definitely a possibility. Chris writes, 3 years ago, I was in a local Nissan dealership getting my oil changed. The television in the waiting area was tuned to Fox. I was angry. I grew even angrier. Several employees came in to watch the report on Iran's president. I asked that the station be changed. They did, but as I was paying for the work, the technician made an asinine political comment. I've not been back to have my car serviced. Chris. Bill writes, Mike, my wife and I have told several banks and grocery stores for years about not doing business with them if they continue to have Fox on the television. My wife briefly told them of their news practices and told them to watch the Greenwald film Outfoxed. We have told the banks that they should have Bloomberg on, and they agreed and changed the station to Bloomberg and has not switched back for over a year now. It works. It's a start to stop the Foxaganda by diminishing its public exposure. Yeah. And that Glenn Greenwald film Outfoxed, I was in that for about 7 seconds. That was the scene where I was being interviewed or whatever by one of these Fox geek bastards, and finally I just ripped the mic off and told them to go F themselves, but then they had cut off the sound. You remember that, don't you, Kathy? That was Valentine's Day before Molly was born. Yeah, about 5 years ago. This is about Bill O'Reilly. This is from Spike from Mount Pocono, PA. Spike writes, my hero of political commentators, the late Hunter S. Thompson, would call Bill O'Reilly a brainless swine with the spine of a jellyfish. As for those polls about Gitmo, let's be real. How many 20-somethings, I'm 29, will turn 30 in September, How many 20-somethings have listed landlines? Few. So who is mostly answering these polls about closing Gitmo or gay marriage? Only geritol a-holes with nothing better to do and just as instructed from the drug-addled freak, Limbaugh, that sends his illegal alien maid to score pills. Let's be real. The mainstream is not answering polls. Most of those polls are dominated by the 55-plus age group. And the other problem with facts about Gitmo, 74% of all Americans get their news from TV only. And when you boob tube, and when the boob tube is not busy with American Idol or Britney Spears vagina pictures, TV is mainly pounding libertarian talking points. Hence why they love the neocon so much. That Ayn Rand, bat crazy Americans of spoiled rich brats. My mother becomes more and more brainwashed by these libertarian asses by the day. I'd love to smack every libertarian propagandist on TV news like the old pro wrestler did to that libertarian swine, John Stossel. I guess I missed that one. Spike from Mount Pocono. And regarding California, Don writes, Mike's common knowledge among the vast majority of California's state legislators, all of the Democrats and even some of the Republicans, that the recipe for solving California's budget problems involves not just budget cuts, but targeted tax increases as well. Recent polls have indicated that a majority of Californians would like to see this kind of balanced approach to solving our budget crises as well. Most of us realize that trying to close a budget shortfall this large by budget cuts alone is a recipe for disaster. Not only will some of the cuts result in unnecessary suffering and death and a reduced quality of life for a majority of Californians, but some of the cuts will also result in reduced tax revenue to the state, exacerbate our unemployment problem, and lead to an increase in crime. Relying on drastic budget cuts to close the budget shortfall is likely to lead to the proverbial downward spiral, and we will end up in even worse crises than we are already in. However, none of this matters. You see, in California, passing a budget requires the support of two-thirds of our state legislature. This means that not only do all the Democrats in both our state assembly and Senate have to vote for a budget to get it passed, but a small number of Republicans need to vote for it as well. As you might have guessed, nearly all of the Republicans in our state legislature have been running on pledges never to raise taxes, regardless of the circumstances, for decades. Nearly all of them have signed Grover Norquist-inspired pledges never to vote for any budget which includes tax increases. Therefore, we are screwed. Like many California voters, I voted against all of the recent statewide ballot measures promoted as reforms designed to solve our budget problems. I voted this way not because some of them included tax increases, but rather because the proposed increases were regressive, like a sales tax, and because the measures would almost certainly do more harm than good. After all, they were supported and promoted heavily by many prominent California Republicans. Don, in the late, great state of California. All right, we're just about ready for a break here. We'll take your phone calls when we come back. I hate to see California going through this. I said the other night, there are two places in the United States that just captures me, and that's New York City and the entire state of California. Although, I've got other favorite places, too. But, I mean, in terms of so much music and literature and theater and art, it's been California and New York City. And all of a sudden, I have this really, it's amazing, a very sick kind of feeling that California is going to die. I just can't seem to get past that. 7 past the hour. A couple of quick... I'll tell you what. Let's just wait a moment and go to the phone calls here. Sue is calling from... she's driving in Arizona, listening to XM. Hey, Sue.
Hey, Mike. I love your show.
Thanks.
The reason I was calling originally was about the Bank of America thing and what happened with me with Bank of America, but I had all... Because I'm a truck driver, and my life I have to live with having everything automatically paid.
Right, right.
And because I'm not home enough to look at my bills and say, okay, so
yeah.
I just have everything automatically paid. Everything goes in the bank.
Right.
Anyways, they up and decided out of the blue on their own without my permission, without asking me, cut everybody off. And there was the money was in the bank. And they just decided, oh, we just don't want to let you have direct pay anymore. And they stopped all these direct pays I had for no legitimate reason, because when I called and talked to them, they couldn't tell me why. Out of the blue, they just canceled everybody that I've been paying for years. This is not like a new one that I set up. This is years.
Right.
And they did that to me, where I ended up in trouble with all my creditors and had to pay back fees to all them, because I didn't realize until the car company calls me and says, you're behind 3 months. What do you mean I'm behind 3 months? You guys get it automatically paid. No, the bank is refusing to give us the money.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, and they told me, the bank is refusing us to give us the money. And they decided that, not me.
So you moved your account out of Bank of America.
Yes, I did. I had to cancel everything with them. And now what's sad is they got my freaking home loan because they bought Countrywide.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, so now I'm dealing with them all over again with the whole Countrywide crap that they bought. But another thing that I think you should know that a lot of people don't know, being a truck driver and stuff, I used to own my own trucking company.
Yeah.
And I had to park the truck in the end of 2007, beginning of 2008, because we already knew then the economy was going down the toilet.
Right.
And it's still down the toilet. People don't, it's not coming, it ain't getting better right now. Trucking industry is the first to know and the first to feel it.
Right.
But anyways, just to let you know, I was reading in our trucking magazine that comes out every couple of weeks, you can pick up at the truck stop, that Yellow Roadway Corp is going to the government asking for TARP fund money to bail them out, this big trucking company that they are union, asking for $1 billion of the TARP money to bail them out.
Huh.
But yet, they're probably going to get the money, but yet, a small business people... There's been a lot of us that had to go out of business, and there was nobody there to help us.
Yeah, well, I'm
all for the union, and I understand that, and I don't want to see those guys lose their jobs.
Right.
But there's got to be, they got to start doing something for the small business owner. I mean, there's a lot of small business guys going under.
Oh no,
they're trying to hang in and. There's no hanging in because right now these companies are undercutting so bad that the rates are so low.
Yeah, I'm real aware of that. Hey, listen, Sue, you're starting to fade. So let me break the call here. I appreciate what you had to say, but you're starting to break up a little bit. You're absolutely right, though, about, you know, small business people. It's, I guess the theory, this is kind of the trickle down theory, only this is Timothy Geithner, Barack Obama style now. The trickle down theory is they've got to save the banking industry. They've got to make sure that the big banksters make lots of money and they can have their multi-million-dollar annual salaries. And they can learn to trust each other again. You know why we had a credit freeze? Because all of a sudden, none of the banks trusted each other. And that's probably the most intelligent decision any of the bastards have made for 100 years. But the idea here, if I understand it right, from reading Prairie 2 and Paul Krugman, is to make sure the banks are solvent and happy as pigs in slop. Don't send me an email about pigs are clean. You know, they're nice and happy like pigs in slop. They couldn't care less about doing anything for the economy. These are rapacious sons of bitches, who historically, and not just in this country, but historically have destroyed people, millions, tens of millions of people, utterly destroyed them with their practices where it concerns money. So what's the solution? Well, the solution is very simple. Do away with the banking system. Yeah, I know. Then what? But I hear you loud and clear. Small businesses failing indeed. But the Geithner-Obama, and got sidetracked there, the Geithner-Obama theory is that, a trickle down, make the banks happy and solvent, and they'll start lending money again. And once they start lending money again, that means credit will ease. And once credit eases again, then people can fund their payrolls or fund their acquisition of new material or fund their acquisition of raw materials on the IFCOM, because, you know, the whole system runs on debt. This is one of the things that if you look at the Zeitgeist movie, you find out that, you know, that $5 bill you have in your hand represents $5 of debt. It's just debt. It's hard to explain on the radio. You need to watch the film. And it's free online. Was that Sue? Thanks, Sue. I appreciate what you had to say. From Roz in Canada, subject line says, crybabies. Mike, the thought of having a few hundred alleged terrorists in a max security prison is nothing compared to walking down certain streets in the inner cities of your country. I know firsthand. These people have been, the Americans, have been brainwashed beyond belief. Witness Cheney repeating the same thing over and over again. Hard to believe that grown men and women can be so scared. I don't think they would have gotten very far during the Blitz in England or Germany. They would have just passed away with fear. They remind me of spoiled children who have never had to contend with any adversity, and they scream long and hard when it comes their way. Roz, if I remember right, Roz is a little girl. Experienced the Blitz in London. If I don't have that right, Roz, send me an email and I'll correct it on the air. But I believe Roz lived in London at the time of the Nazi bombings as a wee child. Yeah, that it's astonishing to me that, you know, I keep going back to that. This crazed, pants-sweating fear of people being held at Guantanamo because Dick Cheney has said that they're ogres or they eat human flesh or whatever the hell it is. We have hundreds of American soldiers who are exposed to these people every single day. What has happened to them? Oh, but Mike, the prisoners are all chained up and everything. Don't you watch Lock Up on MSNBC? Huh? I do. That's about sometimes. I used to watch the telepreachers, but most of them have gotten boring. So I watched this horror show on MSNBC, Lock Up, about prison life. Oh my God, it's an awful series. But you know, like a vulture to a dead rat in the middle of the road, I just keep coming back to it. And if you watch that, you'll see that. The guards in your standard, not federal prisons, because I don't think they're allowed in federal prisons, this film crew, but the standard operating procedure inside state prisons includes all sorts of violence. And when you stop and think that down in Guantanamo, violence, prisoner on prisoner and prisoner on guard and guard on prisoner in our state prisons, our gulag, our, but that's a whole different topic, too. But if you'll notice, any pictures we've seen of the prisons in Guantanamo, these are not supermax prisons. They are more like dog cages. And the American soldiers who are guards there, they may wear latex gloves. I don't know why. Are they afraid of Muslim germs? I'm not sure, but you don't hear of the guards down there being assaulted, which means it's not happening, or we would hear about it. To bring these people to supermax prisons in the United States is obscene only in the sense that they are people who have not been convicted of anything. So deep inside us, this is a danger.
You're listening to Resistance Radio with Mike Malloy.
I'm 21 past the hour. Ben is calling from Madison, Wisconsin, listening on the mic, 92.1. Hey, Ben.
Hi, Mike. Calling early in the show, you were talking about the cuts in the California budget.
Right.
And, well, the Netherlands last week announced they were closing five prisons because they were running out of criminals. I did some numbers on the relative imprisonment rates of the Netherlands and California. The Netherlands has just about exactly half the population. And 1/15 of the number of prisoners.
Right.
So if California were to reduce its imprisonment rate, that is to go ahead and complete the process of releasing prisoners to match the Netherlands, releasing 150,000. That would make up 84% of the state's budget deficit.
Really?
It's not cheap to be a police state.
That's true. Well, that's interesting. Thanks, Ben. I appreciate it. Yeah, the that's a very interesting statistic. The United States, I think most of us know, Ben certainly does, and I do from reading it. You probably know this also. But the United States, sometime was it last year, claimed leadership in two hideous categories. We now have more of our own citizens locked up as a raw number than any other country on earth. We have more people in prison than China or Russia or India, you know, whatever country you want to pick. We have more raw number. We also have more as a percentage of our population than any other country on earth locked up. Like you just said, it's expensive to run a police state. We're, you know, you and I are fairly ignorant of all this stuff going on, aren't we? Huh? What do we have? 2.5 million people in some sort of lockdown at this point. If you add in people who are still caught in the criminal justice system, that would be probation and parole. What does the number go up to? I don't know off the top of my head, but actually locked in over 2 million people. It's approaching 2.5 million people. It's astonishing. Do you know the group that has become, the group that has made the most advances, if that's the right word, in numbers of being locked up are white women, young white women. And obviously, you know what the charge is for most of these people. Drugs. How many people in jail, white and or black, men and or women, are there because of drug charges? You know, this is what I meant the other day when I blogged something about Limbaugh didn't go to jail, and he was involved in drugs up to his eyeballs, up to his eardrums that he blew out. He didn't go to jail. Why? Because he's wealthy. Wealthy people in this country, for the most part, do not go to jail, especially if it's a drug charge. Jesus. But the people that we have locked up on drug charges, rather than getting them treatment, son of a bitch, somebody becomes hooked on meth. Once you're hooked on meth, you're gone, Jack. You're not coming back unless there is some kind of massive medical and psychological and chemical intervention. You simply, no, don't talk to me about the Church of Scientology. Screw them. When you are hooked on meth, you are gone until there is a massive intervention. So what do we do in this country? Well, there's the prison industrial complex that has to be fed. Feed me. Feed me. So we lock people up. We lock people up. And we're at the point now where we have more people locked up in pure numbers and more people locked up as a percentage of our population than any other place on earth. Isn't that lovely? Now, in California, I would assume that California, being the largest state, has the largest number of people in prison. Who's going to be released? Because that's what's going to have to happen. Thousands, tens of thousands of prisoners. Now, these are people who have actually been convicted of stuff. What have they been convicted of? Who knows? Somebody sent me an email the other night and said part of the problem is the California Correction Officers Union. And I don't doubt that for a second. You know, I'm very pro-union. So what? You know, a union that is corrupt and filthy and degenerate is an entity that is corrupt and filthy and degenerate. I don't care if it's a union. I don't care if it's a clutch of Catholic priests. I don't care if it's lawmakers or the President of the United States. If you are corrupt and filthy and committing acts against your own state because of your greed and your insanity, maybe the people of California ought to consider that, but I'm concerned about California. I'm concerned about Georgia too, but I mean California, right? So if Governor Schwarzenegger does order the release of tens of thousands of prisoners as he has promised, who is going to be released?
The A, the G, the cop gay, a 50 cop, a 50 cop, a tall cop. Call a cop, he's called a cop, a 50 flop, I'm gonna shop for a cop, here come the cop, or just the blue, he's after me, he's after you, he's got a gun.
He's the voice inside your head. It's Mike Malloy.
I'm the voice inside their head? Oh, well, you can fix that with a couple of hits of... what are they using now to get rid of schizophrenia? What is the drug now, Kathy? Do you have any idea?
I know. It used to be Melaril.
What was the one that make people break out and get even crazier? What was that?
Acid?
No. Oh, what was it? Oh, well, Douglas is calling from Sacramento, listening on Sirius. Hey, Douglas.
Hey, Michael. Good to talk to you again.
My pleasure.
You reminded me of something while I was waiting here. A show I saw as a kid, it was a superhero comedy, and they catch this guy, and they tell him his crimes, and of course he's an Arab and doesn't know any better. You arrest people for stuff like that, and they say, hey, we're a democracy. We can arrest people for practically anything.
You're right.
It's still funny, but it kind of hurts now.
Yeah, it does, doesn't it?
The main point I was going to mention was you were talking about the climate of fear and stuff like that and
right.
Why people still believe in these things. It reminds me of something I talked to you about years ago, the psychology of getting lost.
Yeah.
And if you want to check it out, it's in the National Geographic Traveler magazine. They probably have a website where you can find it. It's a really interesting subject, but people have just gone nuts, gone psychotic. They've laid down to die and physically died through a refusal to deal with uncertainty.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, sure.
And that's just one of the spookiest things I know, and I just...
Well,
but
you know,
I bring that up again.
Yeah, it is that old line. I'm sure you're familiar with it, Douglas. Adapt or die. It's as old as evolution or natural selection, I should say. Evolution is the wrong term. Natural selection is the proper term. But it is adapt or die. If people who are unable to cope with a situation that requires a decision to be made, and they fall into this state of complete helplessness, yeah, they're going to die. There's no question. Thanks, Doug. I appreciate you checking in. Thorazine was what I was thinking of. I don't want to be the voice inside somebody's head, Kathy. From Rick in Mesa, Arizona. Mike, most of the people who are fearful of bringing the detainees to prisons in the U.S. are also likely to talk up gun ownership with a gleam in their eyes as they fantasize about the day they will be the hero holding the criminal at bay. You would think that these people would be talking the tough talk, like, honey, don't you worry about these detainees. You hear? I got my trusty heap by my side. I'll protect you, darling. I guess these people are convinced These detainees are so incredibly dangerous that their fantasy of becoming a gun-toting hero is shattered by the warm urine going down their leg. Rick and Mesa. Yeah, I don't understand that kind of cowardice. I really don't. I understand fear. You know, I don't mean to give the impression that I'm, you know, some kind of messed up individual that doesn't understand fear. Of course I do. Everybody does. But fear, you know, irrational fear is well, irrational. I can't understand the fear that is directed toward people that we have detained in Guantanamo and other places. You know, we focus on Gitmo as if, well, there's Guantanamo and there might be something over at Bagram Air Base in Afghanistan. And then of course, Abu Ghraib in Iraq, but that's about it. No, that's not about it. Estimates are we have as many as 15, 30, 50 of these secret detention facilities where we torture and kill people. I really don't think very many Americans are aware of the extent, the depth of the mayhem that we have sunk into as a result of 8 years of the Bush crime family and the engineered attack on this country. I don't think most of us understand that. I really don't. We no longer have a claim to moral authority, if we ever did, and that's very debatable, or maybe not debatable at all. But that was part of our story, our mythology. You know, religious people have their mythology and their superstitions. Political types have their mythology and superstition. Part of the mythology of the United States was that we stood for good. We were the good guys. We were the ones that always riding into the rescue, saving the poor dark-skinned mother and child from the rapacious policies of the commies, which is hog snot. You know, the poor dark-skinned mother and child were for the most part exploited by the United States, not by the Ruskies. The Ruskies, what the hell were the Russians doing? Oh, God, but I digress. Never mind. Got an email here from Bob Alexander, who writes that the Netherlands are closing prisons for lack of criminals. Maybe they don't have a for-profit prison system, he writes. The Dutch Justice Ministry has announced it will close 8 prisons and cut 1,200 jobs in the prison system. A decline in crime has left many cells empty. Whew. During the 90s, the Netherlands faced a shortage of prison cells, but a decline in crime has since led to the overcapacity in the prison system. The country now has capacity for 14,000 prisoners, but only has 12,000. So the Deputy Justice Minister announced tonight that 8 prisons will be closed, resulting in the loss of 1,200 jobs, but natural redundancy and other measures should prevent anyone from getting, being fired, the minister said. The 1,200 jobs will just, attrition and redundancy and so on and so forth. The overcapacity is a result of the declining crime rate, which the ministry's research department expects to continue for some time. Bob adds to the story, they only have 12,000 detainees in their whole country. I guess there's no Dutch version of three strikes, you're out. I guess not. Wasn't it just this year that in the state of New York, the draconian Rockefeller drug laws that were instituted back in the 60s have finally been eased? The drug laws that said, not specifically this, because I don't know what the specifics of some of the laws were, but this is a good approximation. You know, you're caught with a pound of reefer, you go to prison for 20 years, period, end of story. You're caught with an ounce of cocaine, you go to prison for 30 years. You're caught with an ounce of crack cocaine, you go to prison for life. No ifs, ands, or buts. Goodbye. Slam. Click. That's it. It's only been this year that those laws were rescinded. It's only been the past 90 days, I think. Jim is calling from Riverside, California. Jim, welcome to the program.
Hi, Mike. How are you?
I'm okay. How are you, Jim?
Good. I'll make it quick just about the fees that Bank of America charges for overdraft.
Uh-huh.
My stepson, he bought Starbucks coffee, about 5 or 6 cups over a span of about 2 or 3 days.
Mm-hmm.
And each time B of A charged him overdraft, $39.
Oh, my God. I'm sorry.
$39.
I'm sorry. I'm not laughing at your son's.
I know, Mike.
It's horrifying.
We called the bank, and they reduced the fees to from about $300 to about $200, Mike.
Mm-hmm.
So, as you said, you know, it's thievery, Mike. This banking system is nothing but thievery from the masses.
Oh, it is. It is.
The capitalist system, actually, the one that we have here, at least, it's theft from the masses, Mike.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks, Jim. I appreciate you checking in. Not to delve back into the religious world. But, you know, I find very interesting stories in all religions. I really do. I just don't subscribe to the overarching theories. But who was it that Jesus, if he really existed, drove from the temple? Who are the first objects of Jesus's rage? War makers? No! Prostitutes? No! Queers? No! Who then? Bankers! The money changers! Right? And it's gotten worse over the past 2,000 years. And again, I mean, if you believe that there's somebody lived named Jesus who was the Christ, okay, fine. If you don't, okay, fine. The stories are very interesting, though. They really, really are. Just like stories from the Bhagavad Gita are very interesting, or the Tibetan Book of the Dead are very interesting, or Greek mythology, right? You learned all about Greek and Roman mythology when you were in school, didn't you? Didn't you find all that interesting about Mercury with his winged feet and Diana, the goddess of the hunt, and yada, 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 yada? Didn't you find all that? Okay, fine. You didn't believe it. You really didn't believe that in Mount Olympus in Greece, somewhere on a Greek island, there was a bunch of Greek gods who were deciding who would eat and who would serve. You didn't believe any of that, did you? Well, okay, that's where I'm at, where it concerns modern day religion. What did you see it as? Quaint, funny, interesting, great stories, but nonsense. Absolute nonsense. Okay, me too. So who was it that Jesus drove out into the street? Whose tables did he overturn? The recruiters for Caesar's army? No, he didn't. The bankers. Before the hour, thanks to our crew, Ben Birch, Sharon Gordy, Bob Alexander, Bridget Wolf, Bruce Zenberg, and our engineer and executive producer, Catherine Bay, for another episode of the Mike Malloy radio program. Speaking of which, what is it? This is Tuesday night. I think we may have the next installment of Mike Malloy Radio Gumshoe ready for presentation on Friday. And in looking at Bob Alexander's script that he sent to us 2 weeks ago, I have to tell you, this one is a killer. So stick around for that, right? Celeste is driving in Ohio and listening to this program on XM. Hey, Celeste.
Hello, Mike. How are you?
I'm good. How are you doing?
Pretty good. I was listening when you were saying about the prisons and the population of the drug prisoners, and I'm afraid they don't want to put them into treatment because there's more money to be made in keeping them in prison.
Absolutely. Absolutely. See, if we had national health care or single-payer health care with a certain aspect of it devoted to mental health care, that wouldn't be the case. But you're right. The prison industrial complex is almost as powerful as the banking cartels and the weapons industry.
Oh, yeah, because look at the DEA. Look at all the money that goes to that. And the war on drugs is really working. So let's throw some more billions of dollars into it. But there's a huge amount of money involved in all around that. So those people aren't going to lose their jobs or their money. My mom's going to be 86, and she believes that marijuana should be legalized. She didn't want us doing drugs, of course, but as teenagers, but she came to this realization in the last few years that it's a victimless crime for the most part.
Yeah. Yeah, my mother passed away at age 89 5 years ago, and she felt the same way. I remember the first time I introduced her to marijuana, she was in her mid-60s, and after she took a couple of hits off a joint that I handed her, she looked at me and she said, "Is this what all the shouting's about?" Can you believe
that's
that?
Great.
Yeah, and her, you know, she was from a generation that looked at things a certain way. She said, "Well, my goodness, it's like having two quick martinis."
Yes, about the hangover. But my mother did admit, because first she said she would have never tried drugs, and I said, "If you tried alcohol as a young woman, you would have tried drugs."
Yeah.
And she did admit that.
Yeah.
So I guess good thing the Bush crime family isn't in power anymore that sent someone to the door to get her.
That's very true. That's very true. All right, Celeste, why are you driving in Ohio? Is this your job?
I work in Toledo, and I don't live there, so I'm driving back to where I live.
Oh, you work in Toledo. That's my hometown.
Yeah.
I knew one person named Celeste in Ohio, and that was years and years and years ago, and she was a very close friend of my brother Danny. That's not you, is it?
No, I'm originally from Pennsylvania.
Oh, okay. All right. All right, so I heard today, since I live here in the Atlanta area, that Dayton, Ohio, that has been the home of NCR, National Cash Register, for the past 100-plus years, Dayton is losing NCR, it's leaving, and it's coming here to the metro Atlanta area. And when I heard that, I thought, oh, my God, one more body blow against Ohio. I don't know how much.
Yeah. I don't know how many jobs that involves, but we're losing so many auto jobs.
Over 2,000, Celeste, 2,000
yeah.
jobs, that NCR jobs from one city, Dayton. Dayton's not that big.
No, it isn't. And people drive in there from, I'm sure they come from over the Indiana line.
Sure.
They come up from between Cincinnati and Dayton.
Uh-huh.
And it's probably one of those things where grandpa worked there and dad worked there, and there's been the third and fourth generations are there.
That's right. And the governor of Georgia was able to offer NCR, if I got the story right tonight on the evening news, $80 million in tax breaks. The governor of Ohio was only able to offer $30 million in tax breaks. So obviously, a corporation like NCR decided, well, we're going to go where we get the best tax breaks. So they're disrupting the lives. If you have 2,000 employees, you got to assume that you're disrupting the lives of probably 50,000 people. When you consider the family members, the small businesses that were depending on the employees at NCR, all of that is being ripped to pieces by NCR so they can move down here to this godforsaken state where they will get an $80 million tax break instead of a $30 million tax break. And it just turns my stomach. I know that some of the workers will leave Dayton. They'll tear themselves away from their homes to move down here to stay employed, but the vast majority won't. So,
well, do you think they'll even be offered jobs?
I'm sure some of them will be offered because they have the skills. But,
yeah.
But if they are offered the jobs, Georgia is a right-to-work state. Ohio is not. And that, that means here in Georgia, the first thing NCR will do will be to banish any kind of union activity and immediately drop the hourly pay or the weekly or the monthly or yearly salary of the workers coming down here. They had a representative from MCR on NCR on the local news saying, oh, yeah, these jobs will be paid $60,000, $70,000 a year. Bat squeeze. That might be for the executives, but it's not going to be for the workers.
No, so, because I hope it's not just their next step down to Mexico.
It could very well be. Hey, listen, drive safely, Celeste, okay?
Thank you.
All right.
I always enjoy listening to you.
Thank you. That's very kind of you to say that. I appreciate it. Take care, okay?
All right. Good night.
All right. Bye-bye. Good night, everybody. Thanks for tuning in. I do appreciate it. If you're not a podcast subscriber yet, go to MikeMolloy.com and consider it. Please? Thank you. I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Molloy.
Did you catch the 8-